everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Women. My name is Lady Tara Morgan. I'm the High Priestess of the Temple of the 13 Moons. I am the owner of Charmed with my wonderful husband, Frank Hinckley. We own Charmed. We have moved to a new location at 60 Main Street in Maynard, Massachusetts, 01754. And we've come back on the airwaves to begin the Season of the Witch this evening, and we are going to go back to an every-week format. We are very excited to have a new co-producer of the show with us, TJ Kay, and she's going to be presenting this evening a new segment called Witchy News. And what she has done is she has researched, and every week she will research pagan news from around the globe, and she will pick what she finds is the most newsworthy for the week, and she will share them here online with all of you. And if we have time, like tonight, she and I will be doing the show together, so we will be, she'll be presenting the news, and then we will have a discussion about it afterwards. The news will still continue on the nights that we have a guest. The guest segment will just be a little bit shorter. So we really hope you enjoy the new feedback, the new format. And if you'd like to give us feedback about it, give me an email, ladytaramorgan@gmail.com. We really think that you'll like this new segment, this new format, and we're really excited to be back here on the air. We have a great line of guests coming up in future shows. Griffin Gowen, founder of the Boston Common Pagan Alliance, will be joining us. Raven Morgane will be coming on. He is the owner of Familiar Spirits, Touch of New Orleans in Rhode Island. Christopher Croucher will be coming back on to talk about healing magic and so much more. We also want to remind you that our annual Witches Cotillion will be held Friday, October 30th, 2015, at Speaker's Nightclub in Marlborough, Massachusetts. It's 19 Weed Street. Yes, it is Weed Street, so it is a little play on words there. And for more information, you can visit our website, witchescotillion.com, W-I-T-C-H-E-S, Cotillion, C-O-T-I-L-L-I-O-N.com. Celebrate the Witch's New Year with us as we open our hearts and our wallets to karma, cat adoption and rescue of Marlborough and Hudson, Massachusetts. They have a capture, neuter, release program, and we have been supporting their efforts for the last 5 years. For more information on karma, make sure you visit karma.org. That's C-A-R-M-A-H.org. And we're very thrilled this year that our Witches Cotillion will be sponsored by none other than Samuel Adams. And also Wicked Wines is also a sponsor for us this year. Actually, Wicked Wines will be sponsoring the Bloodbath Cocktail, which is a drink that we will be serving all evening long. And the entire proceeds of this cocktail will also be added into the kitty, pun intended, the take for karma at the end of the night. Tickets are on sale. You can get them at our on the website, like I said, witchescotillion.com. You can also buy them here at our store, Charmed, 60 Main Street in Maynard, and you will be able to get some at the door. So we hope to see you wearing your witchy best and joining the costume contest for trophies. We'll have about 50 items in the raffle, two raffles, and, of course, our showstopper every year will be about a six-foot broom created by Rue Crowley, the Hedge Witch. So it will be a really great night. As we had said earlier, we also own Magic School, and we have ongoing classes and workshops. The classroom classes or Magic School and Room on the Broom are the online classes. We have guest educrafters like Christopher Kunzak, Judica Illis, and Ellen Dugan. Ellen Dugan is coming November 14th. Christopher Kunzak will be joining us again on September 18th at 7 p.m., and he's going to be teaching angelic witchcraft. And a little description of this course is, many witches feel the path of the witch and the path of the angels are incompatible. Yet many witchcraft teachers and traditions have angelic lore at the heart. Through this workshop, we shall look at the history of angels and their relationship to ancient paganism, as well as the traditions of the fallen angels, the watchers of the Gregori, and the link between angels and the fairy faith in British folklore. We'll follow the influences of angels in the modern teachings of Wicca and witchcraft, including the Golden Dawn, Alexandrian Wicca, Sybil Leek, Madeline Montalban, and Michael Howard. Austin, we will review the most popular of the Archangels and Watchers and experience an angelic ritual. If you pay for this class by September 14th, the cost is $30 per student. After the 14th, it is $35 per student and on the day of class. And we will have links to pay for this class following this broadcast at magicschool.org. Magic is magick.org. We've had some rocking news. And when I say rock, we've had news that have rocked our pagan Wiccan witch community here in Massachusetts over the last couple of weeks. Alex Palermo from the Tremont Tea Room died unexpectedly earlier this month. He and his brother, along with Griffin Gowan, were founders of the Boston Common Pagan Alliance. Alex was a key player for paganism and for gay men in paganism since the 70s. And anybody out there who is a friend of Alex that would like to share some memories, contact me at LadyTaraMorgan@gmail.com or go on Facebook to the Boston Common Pagan Alliance. And I am working on a memorial tribute article for the Spellery magazine. It will come out in October. And Katie Snow, the publisher of the magazine, is going to do a piece, a tribute to Alex about his history, and we want people to share their thoughts, their favorite moments with Alex, photographs. She's going to give us a whole section for him, and so anyone who is interested in participating in this, please contact me via Facebook or via the email that I listed. Also today, I was very, very saddened to hear that another member of our community passed away suddenly. Last night, as a matter of fact, some of you who may have been to Salem or are part of the Salem community would have known Linda Monroe. Linda Monroe, she was one of a kind. You know, she made all of the beautiful hats that you would see at Hex and Omen and Crow Haven Corner, the big, beautiful witch hats, the top hats. She made created vampire dolls. She had a lot of her items in The Witch's Hide and Bewitched in Salem. Most beautiful hats that you could ever see. She made pendulum boards, all kinds of art. Linda passed away suddenly last night at Massachusetts General Hospital. It was unexpected. And even though Linda and I had been estranged for the past 5 years, it was just very sad to me. You know, artist, author, and Salem witch, Linda passed into Summerland last night at Massachusetts General Hospital. And as I stated previously, she was well known for the beautiful hats and pendulum boards, art, and window displays in many stores in Salem. What many people don't know is that she helped me set up my first storefront in Lancaster. She was also on, I think it was either the first or the second broadcast of Witchy Women all those years ago. She was the author of The Flight of Gabrielle, which was her lifelong dream to get that book published. I personally remember when she made ice cream cone displays for a store called Remember Salem, and the foam, the ice cream part, she made out of foam insulation. She had a great witch cackle. She was the one who encouraged me to read at the Witch's Hide in Salem during October, no less. That's actually how I cut my teeth into reading for the public, was at Linda's insistence at the Witch's Hide, run by Delilah and Nate, and it was in October, in the middle of season. So talk about hitting the ground running. Linda dressed with a unique and elegant style. She and I shared many laughs and many, many tears. She will be sorely missed, and I'm very sad that we never got to connect. That, you know, she was a redheaded Italian Scorpio witch, and I'm a redheaded Irish Scorpio witch, and we're stubborn. And I hope she knows how much she has missed, and may she find peace in Summerland. So I had planned on talking a little bit more, but honestly, right now I need to take a little break. And we have a big show planned for you with TJK coming up in about 5 minutes or so. We're going to bring her on at 8:30. But I think right now In Memoriam, it's a good place to break now. And we're going to play a wonderful song by Kellyanna. She gave us permission to use this officially on our show. It's a wonderful song, and it's called She Is Crone. And at the end of the song, we'll be bringing back TJK. We will introduce her to you, and she'll be bringing about the witchy news. Stay tuned.
She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is crone. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is crone. She stirs the cauldron of all knowledge. She is the bringer of death and rebirth. She stirs the cauldron of all knowledge. She is the bringer of death and rebirth. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is crone. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is crone. In the darkness, time of Samhain. In the dream time, she sits and stirs. In the darkness, time of Samhain. In the dream time, she sits and stirs, sits and stirs. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is grown. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is grown. She will lead you your dark mind, and at the crossroads, she'll be your guide. She will lead you to your dark mind, and at the crossroads, she'll be your guide. She is teacher and experience. She is wisdom. She is grown. She is teacher experience. She is wisdom. She is grown. 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 At the crossroads, cauldron of all knowledge, she sits and stirs. At the crossroads, with the cauldron of all knowledge, she sits and stirs, sits and stirs. She is crone. 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 She is crone.
Back live. I hope everybody took that opportunity to go get a drink and a snack and sit down, because we have a lot of news to tell you about TJK. I'm very excited to have her join me here on the show. She is a writer, and she's a young lady that really has great potential here in the pagan community, and we're so very lucky to have her here on Witchy Women with us. And I'm going to bring her on live right now, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about who she is and what she's going to, what her vision is for Witchy Women, what she wants to bring to this show. And then we're going to jump right into the Pagan Witchy News Hour. Hi there. How are you doing, TJ?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So welcome to Witchy Women.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So tell our listeners, you know, I know I'm, you know, you're new to them. You're going to be co-producing here, so I'd like you to just share a little bit about, you know, who you are and your spirituality, what brought you to the pagan path, and you know, you are a younger lady, and you know, everybody knows I'm old. I'm 53, and I know that you're a lot younger than I am. So you have a younger, you laugh, but you have a younger perspective on the pagan community as it flourishes and it's passing into the next generation. So just tell everybody, you know, who you are and what the deal is.
Yeah, well, I've been interested in paganism for about 10 years, and I've done a lot of my own study in my own time, but I'm sort of coming around and learning more of the ritual side and more of the technicalities and the practices. And I'm paying attention to people who have been there and done that and getting a little bit more deeper into my studies these days. And part of that is paying attention to what's going on around me. And I haven't really been aware of a lot of the pagan news, anything about witchcraft in the news. I haven't heard anything about it. So this is all news to me. And it's sort of opened up a world, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot going on around me. So there's a lot to dive into, and I'm really excited to see what's going on and how that can shape my perspective as I go along and grow in my own path.
Well, that sounds awesome. So I know you've been working diligently and finding, I know you found some three really great news stories going up. So I'm just going to let you take it away and report what's new in the witchy news.
Great. Well, the first story that I've covered is there's some crazy stuff going on in India. The Associated Press reported that on August 1st in Patna, India, dozens of villagers in India beat to death five women, accusing them of practicing witchcraft, blaming them for a series of misfortunes in the village. Residents of Kinja village in the state of Jharkhand dragged the women out of their homes and beat them with sticks and iron rods, said Arun Singh, who is a deputy inspector general of police in Rangkai, which is Jharkhand's capital. The attackers blamed the women for several accidents and misfortunes suffered by the villagers, including the death of an infant in Kinja earlier in the week, he said. Police have arrested about 50 people involved in the attack, said Singh. A large number of police officers have been deployed in the village to prevent any outbreak of violence. According to an article by the India Mint, which is a popular publication there, in places where superstition and vigilantism overlap and small rumors can turn deadly, nearly 2,100 people accused of witchcraft have been killed between the year 2000 and 2012, according to crime records. Others have placed the number at 2,500, and others higher still, like the proverbial tip of a very deep iceberg. Available data hides much of the reality problem that is deeply ingrained in society, said the New Delhi-based Partners for Law and Development, or the PLD. They said it's only the most gruesome cases that are reported. Most cases of witch hunting go unreported and unrecorded, and this is because it is difficult for poor and illiterate women to travel from isolated regions to file police reports. The PLD is a legal resource group committed to the realization of social justice and equality for all women. Their website says that they believe that the attainment of women's equality is integral to the pursuit of social justice. Last week in Chandrapur, the Times of India reported that one man was lynched and his, quote, woman accomplice thrashed by a mob for practicing black magic, which said the man was caught red-handed by the mob of over 500 villagers. The mob thrashed the man. He was lynched, critically injured. He was taken to Balarpur Rural Hospital. Doctors referred him to Chandrapur Civil Hospital the same night. He succumbed to injuries later on that night. Offense under the section 302, 143, 147, 148, and 452 of the Indian Penal Code, or the IPC, and relevant sections of the Maharashtra Prevention and Eradication of Human Sacrifice and Other Inhuman Evil and Aghori Practices and Black Magic Act. This is very technical. Of 2013 was registered. A little bit about the IPC. It stands for Indian Penal Code. It's the main criminal code of India. It's a comprehensive code intended to cover all substantive aspects of criminal law. Its basis is the old law of England, freed from estimated unnecessary details, local peculiarities. Elements in it were also derived from the Napoleonic Code and Edward Livingston's Louisiana Civil Code of 1825, where judges generally rule based on their own interpretation of the law, and they also don't have a right to trial by jury in civil cases. The drafting was completed in 1850 and passed into law in 1860. So legally, we're talking about 19th century British sensibility here. In 2014, a 52-year-old woman named Dulari Bai was killed by neighbors on accusation of witchcraft in Uparwara, village of Naya Raipur. She and her farmer husband didn't have children, and her husband's brother, Mehatar, always accused her of being a witch and would often beat her. Mehatar's daughter-in-law fell sick and murmured Dulari's name in an unconscious state, and that enraged the family, who had suspected Dulari was working spells to make her sick. Mehatar and his wife's son and family friend went to Dulari's house and beat her to death. All four were arrested under sections 302 and 34 of the IPC. The case was registered under relevant sections of the Witchcraft Prevention Act of 2005. The state of Chhattisgarh passed the Witchcraft Prevention Act in 2005 to crack down on offenders who take witchcraft cases into their own hands, but the law has hardly made an impact. Atrocities against women are common occurrences in small villages and tribal areas. Witch hunting cases are currently registered under Indian Penal Code IPC sections 302 for murder, 320 for grievous hurt, 351 for assault, 354 for assault or criminal force to a woman with intent to outrage her modesty, 364A for kidnapping for ransom, and 503 criminal intimidation. But there is one glaring problem with the IPC's protection. Asha Bajpai, who is dean at the Center for Law and Society at the School of Law Rights and Constitutional Governance at the Tata Institute of Social Sciences in Mumbai, also known as Bombay, said, "One single definition of witchcraft is missing. Every state has a different definition of it. It is ambiguous in every single state. Three states, Jharkhand, Bihar, and Chhattisgarh, have specific laws against witch hunts. Chhattisgarh's Tonahi Pratadna Nivaran Act of 2005, Bihar's Prevention of Witch Practices Act in 1999, and the Witchcraft Prevention Act of 2001 in Jharkhand. However, physical violence appears to be a prerequisite for any case entering the criminal justice system. Points out, the issue of mental violence isn't even talked about. There is no one national law or legislation against witch hunting there, and the government anticipates it. According to LiveMint.com, in 1991, their Supreme Court, while deciding on a case, had asked the Bihar government to form special cells to deal with witch hunting and draw up a census of widows owning property, as they were believed to be particularly vulnerable to being branded as witches. LiveMint also reported that if there is a state most susceptible to witchcraft killings, it's the eastern state of Jharkhand, a land pervaded by dense forests and tribes. In 2013, 54 witchcraft-accused women were killed there, the highest rate in the country. So what are some of the reasons given for witch accusation? From all of the Indian news sources I read, the same as they were during the mass persecutions of centuries past that we are more aware of. Reasons range from someone falling ill, livestock dying, maybe a community well ran dry, crops didn't grow, someone was holding a grudge. Other times it's politics and property disputes, or even retaliation for sexual advancements gone awry. It basically begins when someone needs blaming. Oja, O-J-H-A, who practices white magic versus the black magic of a Dayan, which is another name for a witch, is consulted over a grievance and will typically confirm a case of witch affliction, which usually ends in a mob attack. The person accused and tortured, injured, or killed is almost always a single unmarried woman or a widow of a lower class or caste in the Indian societal structure. And this mimics the social outcasts first accused in the Salem hysteria that we're probably more familiar with. Rakesh Singh of the Indian Social Institute says, witch hunting is essentially a legacy of violence against women in our society, for almost invariably it is low-caste women who are branded as witches. By punishing those who are seen as vile and wild, oppressors perhaps want to send a not-so-subtle message to women. Docility and domesticity get rewarded. Anything else gets punished. Modern witchcraft punishments are very much the same as ever, but rather than sophisticated torture instruments and methods of government of old England, justice in India is achieved backyard vigilante style. Strangling, throat slitting, hanging, dragging, public dumping, poisoning, beating, hacking, burning, heads being shaven and teeth being bashed in, sharp objects being driven into the eyes, gang raping, breasts being cut off, being branded, stripped naked and paraded publicly, being forced to consume both human and animal excrement, and excommunication and mental affliction for those who actually survive. Shashank Sinha is a research scholar who is currently writing a book about the long-term history of witch hunting in India. In his research paper, Adivasis, Gender and the Evil Eye, The Construction of Witches and Colonial Chotanagpur, he says the Santhal theory of the origin of witchcraft attributes gender tension as the reason for witch hunting. Kharia, K-H-A-R-I-A, women, were excluded from religious festivities and rituals because the tribals feared that the menstrual blood attracted evil spirits. Women in tribal communities were left out of Adivasi rituals and religion because of a fear and suspicion of their sexuality. Sinha believes that witch hunting has changed over time. He says, earlier the prevalent idea was that a woman who was a witch was born a witch, as in it was hereditary as opposed to an acquired art. So the woman was killed directly and her family annihilated. Later, the perception changed and it was thought of as a craft that needed training. Now the idea has dispersed and it can refer to basically anything. So how is a witch specifically identified these days? A man in one article I read claimed you could identify a witch simply by looking at her eyes. After incantations to counter black magic, an oja, which I had referred to, helps an afflicted family identify a witch via various methods, including writing names on a branch of a tree, waiting for one of the branches to wither, wrapping small portions of rice in cloth bags with names on them, putting them in a nest of white ants to see which bag the ants eat. One shaman in 2011 forced 30 women to drink a truth serum-like potion made from poisonous herbs to prove that they weren't witches. The real one would voluntarily confess. All the women fell ill and were admitted to the hospital, and the shaman was arrested. So now that we are aware of what's going on and how prevalent it is, what is being done to stop these atrocities? According to the Mahila Samakhya Society, a program to improve the social status and personal empowerment of women through education, witch hunting cases are significantly fewer in areas with a good government network of primary health care centers. They say if doctors are made available in rural areas, incidences of witch hunting can come down. Beer Singh Sinku, a social activist from voluntary organization Johar in Chaibasa, Jharkhand, says brain malaria, tuberculosis, diarrhea, malnutrition, and anemia are very common in the small villages. Whenever someone dies because of an illness or lack of health care or can't reach the hospital because of the distance or bad roads, someone, somewhere, is branded as a witch and held responsible for the death. In one report, ADN Prasad, who is a former civil surgeon of Chaibasa in West Singhbhum, said, "I have received several cases when villagers, just because they believe in superstition more than science, reach the hospital very late. We don't get enough time to save the lives, and when someone dies, there are protests against the doctors. This is all because of illiteracy." DW, a German international broadcaster, interviewed Indira Jai Singh, a senior lawyer in the Indian Supreme Court, founder of Lawyers Collective, an India-based non-governmental organization that promotes human rights. Jai Singh is the first woman to be appointed additional Solicitor General of India. She says the laws against offenders are ineffective because various states already have their own laws against witchcraft and other unorthodox practices. The problem lies in their enforcement. For instance, in 15% of the cases registering with SOM since 2008, the investigation has met with a dead end, with the police claiming that no accused could be identified. She said communities need to be empowered before a law for their benefit can be enforced. Witch hunting is just one of the many forms of violence against women. Inequality and gender-based discrimination are issues that need to be addressed at different levels, starting from grassroots awareness to better policymaking. To put an end to the problem, Jai Singh suggests that civil society and government should work together at the grassroots level in order to change the mindset of the people. She says this can happen through information, education, and communication. Media is also a powerful tool. They can build community-based organizations for prevention of witch hunting and for compensation, rehabilitation, and reintegration of the victim and or families of the victim. And some real witches are taking the issue into their own hands. DNAIndia.com reported that on October 31st, 2013, in the wake of the gang rape of photojournalist Shakti Mills, a ferry boat of Wiccan witches sailed into Mumbai to perform a protection ritual for the safety of women in India and to educate the public about the positive, constructive realities of traditional witchcraft and belief in practice. And that about wraps that up. But that's just
a lot. So they sailed in and nothing happened to them? That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thrilled that they would do that, to perform that ritual, but in a place where, you know, there's such violence towards women and witches, or people that aren't even witches. I guess it's because they are witches that they were protected.
Yeah. There was nothing about that they were guided or ushered in or anything. Maybe because they were coming from another area. There was jurisdiction over their travel. I'm not really sure, but there wasn't anything about them being harmed or persecuted in any way.
What I find very interesting about this article is when they talk about, you know, in these villages where there's no health care, so somebody has to be blamed, and you have to have quality. If quality health care is provided to these indigenous counties and villages, and literacy programs are brought in, that this will curtail this problem. Yet here we are in the United States, and they're still trying to overturn Roe versus Wade. In rural areas of Texas, a woman can walk into the CVS, present a prescription for birth control, and if the pharmacist is against it, he doesn't have to fill it. And it's in these very rural areas in states like Texas that women are almost subjugated as they are in Mumbai. And it just astounds me that this is all based upon what? Fear of a woman's power? Because, and it's the same thing with the Inquisition in Europe, and the same thing, you know, a woman who will not submit, women who do not know their place. If they are incredibly beautiful or horrendously ugly, there's always, you blame the woman, always.
It is it's a timeless fear. It's a timeless fear, and it's just pervaded all time and space. Yep.
Astounding.
And it's crazy because, you know, we're in the age of information, and even here, people are extremely ignorant about the realities of paganism, witchcraft, Wicca. It's astounding. And the way women are treated here, it's just, seems like you can't really escape it. And it's just, you know, better or worse in some societies.
Well, women traditionally don't stick together. You know, you have groups here and there, but across the board, women, I don't know if they've been taught or if it's just something, but women are generally suspicious of one another. There's no trust. I mean, we all know somebody who has said, well, if she would just leave my husband alone, he would be faithful. We've all
mm-hmm.
heard that. Or she got the job because she has big boobs. Or
mm-hmm.
it's always something, geez, you know, she's got five kids from five different fathers. She's a slut, you know,
mm-hmm.
or a woman who has a drug problem. Oh, she's a skanky drug whore. She'll do anything for drugs. And
mm-hmm.
you know, and I bring that last one up because of a case here in Massachusetts. Jessica Connolly, she died of a drug overdose last night. Her daughter was the child in the news that died in foster care. And she put up a Facebook page to try to raise money for a lawyer, and four pages calling her anything from a skank, that she should take the money to be sterilized, everything. I mean, they publicly humiliated this woman. They took her rap sheet. Yeah, she had a drug problem, and she'd been in jail for 9 months. And they posted her rap sheet on the front page of the newspaper. She was destroyed. She was humiliated. And people, oh, well, I'm glad she's dead. She was a waste of space. Nobody wins in that situation. She was a mother who had a drug problem,
yeah.
who lost her child. And they don't look at that. And do they honestly think that she got any type of rehabilitation in that jail? No, she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
She was given junk food and a Bible. And that's it. And so women come out, women like Jessica and several others, you know, they come out and they don't have any resources. She's out of jail. She's trying to get her life together. Her daughter dies in foster care, and the whole world turned against her. So is it any surprise that she went right back out and she OD'd last night? Is there any empathy?
Absolutely
is there
not.
Any compassion? No, there isn't. So, you know, it's so convenient. Blame the woman. She's a slut. She's a whore. She's a something. You know,
mm-hmm.
where's our compassion as a society? And you know what? There were just as many nasty comments on that GoFundMe page from women as there were from men. And this is what I'm traditionally talking about. Women turn on women in a dime. Just like that, in pagan society, in Christian society, and in any society, you know, it's and that, I believe, is really part of the problem. The more things change, the more they stay the same. We women make so many strides, but then there are so many women that buck the system. You know, you're a younger generation. Things are starting to change for your age group, you know. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. And this is just so troubling. What happens here in the United States, what happens over in India. And I know there's so many more stories out there that we're not even aware of. I mean, I looked over some of that article, and it said only the most horrendous witchcraft torture crimes are reported. There are so many
mm-hmm.
others that are not. It's just like with rape, when they used to shame the rape victim. They would shame her like that. There was a movie years ago, and it was based on a true case here in Boston. It was the accused by Jodie Foster. And she went into a bar, and she had a lot to drink, and she had on a short skirt, and she was gang raped on a pool table. And they put her on trial, her behavior, what she had to wear, the fact that she was drinking.
Oh, yeah, I see that all the time. And you know what I think the problem is that people are generally wholly unaware of how society affects our view of people, other people, women in particular. And women are just as swept up into that as the men are. And society is generally patriarchal, the way we run, the way we believe, the way we worship, the way we do everything. It's very man-centered. And women turn on women, I think, because we drink the Kool-Aid and we don't even know we're drinking it. It's internalized misogyny, really. And I wasn't really aware of that until I started looking more into feminist theory. And I realized that maybe I had internalized some of that myself. It wasn't until I got older and into my mid-20s that I started really kind of waking up out of that and going, yeah, you know what? Women aren't to blame. But
very interesting. You know, we could have a 3-hour show based upon that theory. And, you know, well, the whole basis for Christianity was the fact that they hated women. They were jealous because women were the life givers and they weren't.
Yeah.
And so from there, it just snowballed. And, you know, that's a topic for another night. I know that you have two other segments that you would like to get in. Would you like to take a short break or would you like to go right into the next one?
I wouldn't mind grabbing a drink of water, but I don't need that long.
All righty. Well, then let me see. What can I find to play here? All right. I have a song that's about 4 minutes. I'll give you 4 minutes to everybody stretch, take a drink, grab something to eat, and we will be back with the next segment of Witchy News.
Perfect.
are back live on the air again. Welcome back to Witchy Women. I'm Lady Tara Morgan. I am your hostess this evening, along with TJK, who is reporting the witchy news. Now, are you ready for the next segment, my dear?
I sure am.
All right. What do you have for us now?
Okay. The next story that I have is about the triple homicide in Florida. Last month, that was suspected to be a Wiccan ritual killing. According to NBC News, a triple homicide in Pensacola, Florida last month is suspected to be a Wiccan ritual killing related to the Blue Moon, police said. Vonseal Smith, age 77, and her two sons, Richard, 49, and John, 47, were discovered when one of the son's employers realized he hadn't shown up for work. Von Seal and John both died of blunt force trauma and had their throats cut, police said. Richard was shot in the ear as he came in the house and had his throat cut, Hobbs said. Police believe a claw hammer was used to commit the murders, said Sergeant Andrew Hobbs. No evidence of a forcible entry was found, and while police have spoken with a person of interest in the case, no arrests have been made, said Hobbs at the time, though he told NBC News that it appears that this might be connected to some type of Wiccan ritual killing and possibly tied to the Blue Moon. The Blue Moon took place on a Friday, and the bodies were found on Tuesday, the day that they were believed to have been killed, sometime after 7 p.m. When asked how the evidence suggests that these are ritualistic or Wiccan killings, Sergeant Hobbs said, quote, the injuries to the victims, the positions of the bodies, and also the person of interest right now is also a practitioner. This has outraged Wiccan and pagan communities. Dr. Gwendolyn Reese, a specialist in contemporary paganism at American University, told The Guardian that if they had done even a modicum of research, it would be clear that this had nothing to do with paganism. It's very irresponsible and highly prejudiced on the part of the sheriff. A self-described pagan user on the forum The Cauldron disapproved of the broad strokes with which local authorities painted the entire community, saying, I think if the sheriff is going to say that the crime is a Wiccan ritual, he should be made to point out exactly which ritual it was and where it says in any authoritative work on Wicca that such rituals are permitted. In fact, there is no such thing as ritual murder involved in the Wiccan religion, nor does it make any sense to associate these grisly deaths to any belief or practice stemming from Wiccan ritual. Seamus McKeon, who has practiced Wicca for 14 years and is a high priest, spoke to NBC News about the case and said, it makes absolutely no sense. There's no positioning of bodies that would indicate Wicca. I don't even know how three bodies would have been able to make a five-pointed star. Government agencies have a tendency to lump the occult and crime together. The Wiccan community is calling it a haunting comparison to the now infamous West Memphis 3 case, where in 1993, three teenagers made national headlines and spawned documentaries when police arrested them for the murders of three young boys from West Memphis, Arkansas, killings that at the time were called satanic in nature by authorities. One of the teens received the death penalty, while the other both received life sentences for the murders. But all three were later released when new DNA evidence surfaced. In an NBC News report, Peg Loy, who writes the Witching Hour blog and worked in the West Memphis 3 case as a journalist, said she wasn't surprised by police jumping to conclusions. She said, Damien Eccles was practicing Wicca. He was not super serious about it. He was interested in occultist Aleister Crowley, and he had a book of shadows, and he wore black, you know, and all of these things kind of worked together to turn this crime into a ritualistic crime, which it was not. Selena Fox, a Wiccan priestess and the senior minister of Circle Sanctuary, one of America's largest Wiccan churches, said that many in the movement found their statements very troubling. She said, ritual murder is not part of the Wiccan religion. It never has been, and it's not now. It goes against the ethical principles of our religion. Fox, who is also executive director of Lady Liberty League, a pressure group which lobbies for rights and for Wiccan and pagan beliefs, described Morgan's statement and many of the media coverage that has followed it as defamation. Wicca and other nature religions, she said, are about celebrating life and celebrating the cycles of the season and nature and living in harmony with other humans. If more people understood that, there would be less prejudice. There are so many crime shows on TV and the internet that involve witchcraft, and I think that some storylines can complicate reporting on actual crimes. The truth is, bold-faced, speculative, malicious lies about Wiccan and pagan faiths hurt innocent people by placing them in vulnerable and dangerous situations with the public. Mischaracterizations in media and entertainment and irresponsible journalism, along with willful ignorance on the part of individuals, all lead to unfounded fear and undeserved persecution. And it perpetuates harmful stereotypes and misinformation that continue that societal tradition. This is a story at least as old as our nation. It is baffling that we continue to deal with this in the information age. How many books, websites, and scholarly articles need to be published about the origins of our faith and the realities of our beliefs and practices before people get it through their heads that we are not the evil perpetrators of myth and legend? When is this medieval nonsense going to stop? When is open education finally going to eclipse these archaic notions of who we are? Open letter to the sheriff. Courtney Weber, a Wiccan priestess, writer and activist, wrote, "Because of stuff like this story, we're left open to prejudice and attack. Many of us find ourselves in danger of losing our jobs, and in some cases, our children, because people believe our practices are inherently bad because of press coverage like yours. We are routinely abused, ostracized, and demonized by non-Wiccan families and friends because people are wont to believe the sensational hype rather than ask us the truth about our faith and practices, which do not include ritual murders." As an example, just this January, a pagan, a term which encompasses Wicca, Shooting for the Moon Spiritual Development Center, a shop in Pennsylvania, received a Molotov cocktail as a New Year's Day toast. Owner of the shop, Kathy Brown, noticed the petrol bomb on the floor of her store after feeling a cold breeze in her shop. Thankfully, the bomb had failed to ignite. The center's mission is to provide a place where people can grow and learn and expand their awareness and understanding of others. Education and knowledge is power. Fear is what you experience when you do not understand something or someone. By understanding another's spirituality, you can link with that person to form a stronger bond, one that leads both individuals closer to the divine. Brown said that prior to that incident, she had always enjoyed the support of the community, and that Lowe's Lumber donated a scrap of plywood to cover the broken window until she could arrange for new glass to be installed. Courtney Weber has this advice for the public at large. To those who are reading this and who may wonder how much of these Wiccan ritual killing articles are true, they are not. Pick up a book on Wicca. They're in every bookstore. Google our practices. You'll find lots of information. Read our blogs. Ask us questions. Go wild and attend one of our events. They're not hard to find. Just stop believing the hype. I don't want to flip on the computer one day to find out yet another person has lost a job or suffered injury due to a business, or worse, because of this hype. Seems like that's everywhere now.
Well, I did an interview with Carrie Withers, and Kira Withers, and she was down. She's a pagan children's author down in Port Richey, Florida, and she writes Rupert the Rabbit. And Rupert is a rabbit that it's a children's story. It teaches children about paganism and Wicca, the Wheel of the Year and everything. And about the time that first horrible movie, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, came out, all of a sudden she started to be harassed. You know, drive-bys, yelling and screaming all hours of the night, burn the witch, you know. Then somebody shot through her window where she usually, I think it was a BB gun, but still, right through the window where she usually sits to write her children's books. Then somebody threw a Molotov cocktail, but it had some type of noxious gas in it. It landed at the feet of her daughter, and she ended up with a lung infection. The Port Richey police didn't feel that it was, you know, ritualistic, and they didn't feel that it was a violation of rights. until Selena Fox and Lady Liberty League went down to educate Port Richey police as to the fact that this was a hate crime, and Wicca is a recognized and protected religion by the Constitutional Amendment in the United, in, you know, of the United States. But I interviewed this woman, and what she went through was horrible. It was because of that stupid movie, which is now coming out with Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters 2, which is produced by Will Ferrell. So there wasn't enough crap that was done the last time this movie came out. Now this movie's coming out. And now there's another Vin Diesel movie, Burn All the Witches,
yeah.
Witches Need to Fear, Witches Will Be Killed. They don't,
the last
have they
witch
forgotten
hunter.
That, yeah, The Last Witch Hunter. And, you know, they seem to forget we live in a society where children, young adults, a lot of people, they live through the internet and social media. They have no social skills. Kids that are 16, 17, and 18 have so much anxiety for the real world, they can't go to school. They're online schooled. They don't even get their driver's license. When I was 16, I couldn't wait to get a license. You know, and so we live in a society where a young man will come out and gun down a girl and a bunch of his students because she refused to go to the prom with him. But yet we continue to allow Hollywood to perpetuate the myth, to spend, let's waste millions of dollars on movies like this that are going to have the effects that we just discussed. We know damn well that they, you know, they find any reason to, you know, because they're too, sorry, but the Pensacola police are too lazy to do their job. So it's easier to say it's ritualistic. It's easier to say to point the finger at the Wiccan community because, you know, the Christian community wants to believe that Wiccans, witches, and pagans are the fault. You know, we're the scourge of all of society. You know, and it's law enforcement needs to be responsible. Lawmakers need to be responsible. Hollywood producers and writers and actors need to be responsible. You know, my husband says, when's the last time Vin Diesel ever had a hit? And I know he meant, well, but it's not the point. It's not the point. Mm-hmm. You know, when this movie, The Last Witch Hunter, is going to hit in October. October the 21st, the week before Samhain, the witch's new year. So this movie is going to be out a full week before Samhain or Halloween, as the commoners call it. What chaos can we expect? What problems are going to occur for us? Maybe not me or you because we live here in Massachusetts, but we don't know. So there has to be some type of societal moral compass and responsibility for all of this. You know, this police officer, that officer, he should be suspended because if he said it was a crime, it was a black crime because there was, I don't know, think of something about the black American community, or if it was a Jewish-based crime, or they must have been gay because there was something, because there was a rainbow flag sitting there, then he would have been fired for discrimination, and there would have been lawsuits, and it would have been all over the news for that. But, hey, he just accused a bunch of women and a bunch of Wiccans, so it always seems to be like it's open season on us. You know, when Fox News made their comments about it, none of those broadcasters were fired. You know, they made a bunch of lame on-air apologies a few years ago, but nothing ever happened. And that was because we farmed, in conjunction with other online petitions, we petitioned to make them do it, but it was lame. You know, and that's the problem. It's just like, oh, well, it's just a woman. You know, the N-word is offensive. You know, calling somebody the F-word to refer to gay men is offensive, but you can still call a woman a slut, a cunt, or a whore, or a slag, or whatever it is you want to call her, and there's no problem. So where is it do we as a society draw the line and say no more? You know, so Selena Fox is a trailblazer for our community, the witches, the Wiccans, the pagans. She is a trailblazer because she, you know, I posted this in outrage. She has the resources and Lady Liberty League to go down and say this is not right. But, you know, how much more? I mean, this is 2015. When do we stop being blamed because we were born women who don't go to church every Sunday and give 20% of our income to a man standing in a pulpit telling us that we're no good, we're dirty, we're unclean, and how to live our lives? When does that stop? And that's basically what all this is. The Catholic and you know, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, they're all losing control. Wicca continues to be the fastest growing religion. This is 6 years running amongst young women ages 13 to 37. Continues to grow. Mm-hmm. And the people who go to Catholic Church, Christianity, it has been declining 60% per year. Well, 60% per year, you got to figure, if somebody was 77 years old and they'd been going to church and putting money in the offering and was giving 20% of his income since the time he was 20, that would be 57 mm-hmm. years of every Sunday that he gave money. And think of all the other people who did that. Now, mm-hmm. with things changing and women and other people expressing different spirituality and different things, they're losing that money. And so they have to blame somebody. So, of course, they have to demonize us again, like they did with the Inquisition, to try and bring them all back to church. Televangelists are now being investigated for fraud and tax evasion. You know, the Westboro South Baptist Church, I never get their name right because they just make me sick. The ones that protest the soldiers
and
everything.
Yeah, the Westboro.
They're tax exempt. Why is it that they don't have to pay taxes, but we do? Why is it that their organization is covered under the guise of a church to go out and spread hate? That's not right. And, you know, our government is lazy on that. They really, but, you know, they're lazy on taxing churches like that. They're lazy by allowing sheriffs to accuse a Wiccan community, of a ritualistic murder. Wiccans are, you know, the fluffy bunnies of our community. You know, they live in the light. Harm ye none, do what thou wilt. You know, they mm-hmm. always live in the light. They're always, you know, they believe karma will take care of everything. So, you know, I don't know when it's going to stop, you know, and it's just so very frustrating. You know, that just to hear these things and to just, they need to get off their asses and they need to find the real killer and stop blaming Wiccans for every little thing that's wrong. We need to stop blaming women for every little thing that's wrong. And that's my little soapbox rant.
And I agree. 100%.
You know, it's so frustrating. I'm 53 years old. You know, I grew up in a different generation than a lot of people listening did. And, you know, when my mother's generation, you know, you graduated, you got married, you had kids, you know. If you became a nurse, it was to marry a doctor. You know, if you were a secretary, mm-hmm. it was to marry a lawyer. You know, it was always, that was the mindset. And things started to change a little bit when I was growing up. But, you know, it was still the myth was perpetuated that a woman needed a man to survive. And now, as 2015, attitudes are changing again. The world is turning on its axis in our favor. Women are once again stepping into their place of power. And this is once again perpetuating that fear by white American men or white men everywhere that, you know, they're going to be knocked off their pedestal when women truly claim their power. Because when we truly step up and claim our power this time around, in the information age, they're not going to knock us off it again. And all of these laws against us are going to change, and their whole way of life is going to change, and they don't want that. They want that control. They want to keep us in our place. And that's why the sheriff, somebody like this would say something like that. It's to put that fear mm-hmm. of witchcraft, that fear of Wiccans, that fear that has been so engraved in generation after generation since the 900s, about witchcraft. It's astounding. And I really hope Selena Fox can nip this in the bud. And anybody who's listening, I will never watch anything by Will Ferrell again. I want nothing to do with anything that he's involved with. I even sent him a Facebook message asking him how he could produce a movie that perpetuates the violence and degradation of women. And, of course, he didn't respond to me. I'm just saying. You know,
he's rich and he's white and he's a man. He's got better things to do, you know.
Well, you know, but they're saying that they're trying to say that this Hansel and Gretel thing and this Last mm-hmm. Witch Hunter, that they're both going to be franchises. Which means we're going to have problems for quite a while until we can, you know, until we can get enough people to boycott this crap. And, you know, even if it goes straight to video, people are still going to see it. They're still going to, you know, do what they do. And it's just, I don't know. And here's
really
something
a societal
that's right
problem.
Here. What's here in this Huffington Post that I was looking at, it just says, here is a wonderful statement, and we don't even have to respond to it. It's just, do they realize how these lies hurt innocent people? You know, pagans, Wiccans, and witches are the people who have been hurt, silenced, and let down by the bigger faith. Houses of worship who struggle to raise their enrollments while we struggle to keep up the swelling numbers in ours. Yet because of things like this story, we're left open to prejudice and attack.
Mm-hmm.
The lies continue to hurt innocent people. And until women and pagans in our community really truly take a strong stand beside Selena Fox and the trailblazers, instead of letting them do all of the work, until we can make a unified front, I don't really see how anything is going to change. And that's really sad.
I agree.
So I'm hoping that your generation coming up, you know, as we pass the torch to your generation and you come up and you come into the places of power, that you can pick up the torch and you can fill in the holes and the patches where my generation has failed.
Because, you know, I feel like my generation, we're the internet age, and we have access to so much. And I mean, we all do, but, you know, this is sort of a thing that happened while we were growing up. And, there's all kinds of social forums, social media, where people are having really critical discussions about, feminism and paganism and all kinds of things that were sort of buried down deep for a long time and would just kind of be fringe discussions. But now they're out in the open and people are really discussing these things. And we're sort of caught in the middle. Like it's something that we are, like, I'm at once comfortable with and feel powerful in, but at the same time, I still live in a society that puts it down and degrades it and makes me feel like I need to be ashamed and fearful. So it's tough to know how to live, really. You know, you have your principles on the one hand, but then you need to navigate society on the other, and it's kind of a tough balance. But I really do feel like women are coming out of their shell a little bit and sort of embracing these things. So it'll be interesting to see where the next generation takes it.
Well, I will step back as an elder, and I will just watch it. You know, when I pass my torch and the next generation comes up, I will guide and I will observe. But there will come a time when even I, the feisty fighter that I am, will have to cast my sword and sit back and guide and just hope that things in the next generation can continue on. So I see that you have one last segment for us that is ending, so that will wrap up this part of the witchy news on a positive note. So would
mm-hmm.
you like to get into the next segment about religious freedom through interfaith cooperation in North Carolina?
Sure. So there are a couple of articles that I came across, a couple of them on wildhunt.org, that discuss issues of conflict between religion and state, as well as interfaith cooperation across the country. So prayer at public meetings is often a battleground, with members of minority faiths seeking to have their viewpoints represented, while others argue that such religious ceremony doesn't belong in a governmental setting. Since the Supreme Court's 2014 Town of Greece versus Galloway decision, which deters religious favoritism and allows such prayers provided minority faiths are included, pagans and others have sought to test these boundaries. For example, the pantheist Suhor, S-U-H-O-R, saying an invocation of the quarters at a county commission meeting in Florida. One county commissioner walked out of the meeting as he began, telling a news reporter, "I'm just not going to have a pagan or satanic minister pray for me." It's unclear whether he has confused the two terms, if he's ascribing them both to Suhor, or if he sees them as one and the same. David Suhor, who describes himself as an apple biter, that is agnostic, pagan, pantheist, living existentially and biting every apple I want to, he says, firmly believes that a moment of silence is the only way for public bodies to be inclusive when they incorporate prayer into meetings. He has been using the language of the Greece versus Galloway decision to push that agenda. The court held that prayers are acceptable so long as a policy of non-discrimination is followed. Suhor says the tradition of allowing each board member to choose who will give the prayer means that they tend to pick their own religion, he said, and I have sat through a lot of Christian prayers. He points to his difficulty getting on the calendar. He did it once before a county commissioner's meeting 2 years ago, but he has been repeatedly rebuffed by the school board. No one wants to stand for a minority religion, he said. You have Suhor calling to the quarters, singing a prayer written by Starhawk with accompanying magical gestures quickly went viral. What do other local members of these minority religions think about the firestorm that Suhor has created? The reactions are generally positive, although the specific content of his prayer is sometimes questioned. Reverend Edward Livingston of the Fire Dance Church of Wicca in Milton, Florida, said of Suhor, "He has never attended our church or taken part in the greater pagan community, but not all pagans like to work in groups or circle with others. I support his challenges to the legal and governmental system, but I also see him as doing this to make them stop using invocations and prayer, but a moment of silence instead. He has said to me he would consider all invocations and prayers outside the normal local top three religions until they change the rules. We are not as political as he is. We are a small Wiccan pagan church that provides a ritual 8 times a year for those who want to circle with others." Cynthia Jerkovich is an ordained priestess hierophant of the Fellowship of Isis, who also lives in the panhandle of Florida. She supports Suhor's goals, but questions his methods. Jerkovich said, "First, I totally agree that if prayer is to be allowed before any meeting of government bodies or other institutions, all spiritual and religious traditions should be given the opportunity to offer a prayer. Likewise, I support David Suhor's right to step up to offer pagan prayers at these government functions. Where I feel he took a wrong turn is in what he presented at this meeting. Invoking the elements is not in alignment with the intention of speaking a prayer to a higher power, however you name it, for wisdom and guidance in decision-making, and working toward the highest good regarding the outcome of the meeting. I thought it was ridiculous that he's saying elemental quarter calls. He was not there to cast a ritual circle. The elements are not the same as deities. Why did he not say a prayer to pagan deities suitable to the intention of the meeting? It appears to me that by coming before the assembled people and then singing elemental quarter calls, complete with gesticulation, that he was purposefully irritating and provoking a dramatic response, and this was completely inappropriate." Suhor has responded by saying that he's a musician and explained that he's more comfortable singing in public than speaking. He said, "I wasn't going over the top, just expressing as fully as I knew by calling the quarters. Identifying as a pantheist," he said, "his view on the divine nature of the elements differs from Jerkovich's." More recently, this summer, when the issue of inclusiveness sprang up Foothills region of North Carolina, it led to a new level of interfaith dialogue in the form of the Foothills Interfaith Assembly. The commissioners of Lincoln County in North Carolina opened their meetings with a prayer, and it's always been a Christian one. When another county in the state was forced by a federal judge to cease pre-meeting prayers altogether, a reporter asked Carol Mitchum, chairman of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners, if any changes would be made to their meetings. Mitchum's response was to the point. She said that prayers and only Christian ones would continue. He's quoted as in the Lincoln Times News as saying, "A Muslim, he comes in here to say a prayer, I'm going to tell him to leave," Mitchum said. "I have no use for those people. They don't need to be here praying to Allah or whoever the hell they pray to. I'm not going to listen to a Muslim pray." Mitchum's comments caught the attention of local Muslim community, as well as others practicing minority faiths in the county, and two of them showed up in the next meeting to speak to the issue. They were the Reverend Tony Brown of the North Carolina Piedmont Church of Wicca and Dustin Bartow, a Muslim who doesn't yet belong to a specific spiritual community. During that meeting, commissioners softened Mitchin's comments into a policy that said that the religious leaders or chosen leaders of any assembly that periodically and regularly meets in Lincoln County for the purpose of worshiping or discussing their religious perspectives are invited to offer an invocation before a meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. In those words, the two men saw an opportunity to have their faith included, but the idea quickly grew well beyond a mechanism to promote religious freedom. Brown said the policy said any faith could give a prayer if it was sponsored by something that met in the county. I don't know if it was designed to be restrictive, but the thought might have been to put up barriers that ensure only established faiths qualify. Bardo and Brown created the Foothills Interfaith Assembly, named not for the county, but the more inclusive region of the state, as a way to allow people of different religions to engage with one another around their beliefs. Qualifying to offer prayers was the impetus. Brown said that from the get-go, the deeper idea was to take advantage of everything else that interfaith can do. Brown said that a dozen people showed up to the first meeting, which was very productive as they came up with a list of guiding principles and a mission statement. He expects the future get-togethers to offer opportunities to learn about different traditions. He said through dialogue and meeting as equals, interfaith work will always appeal more to minority faiths, but we can band together, lift each other up, and have a better chance of being heard than by whispering alone. So that's interesting. Two different faiths working together, and you don't really hear of that very often.
Well, I think that they try to do that a lot in the Universalist Unitarians, but those seem to be, to me, still predominantly Christian, where they, you know, occasionally, you know, have, you know, a pagan or a Wiccan minister come in, or they'll have a rabbi come up and say something. It's almost like, I don't know, maybe some Universalist Unitarians are different, but to me, that it just seems like they want to get you into church, they'll pacify those that have a different viewpoint, but in the end, it's all about conversion. You know, converting them to their quote-unquote faith of choice.
I would agree. I've been to a Unitarian Universalist church, and it was nice to hear perspectives from other faiths. I feel like I learned some things, and I always find that stuff very interesting and heartwarming. But it definitely felt very churchy to me. You know, I grew up Christian, so it felt like a Christian church. I didn't end up going back. I didn't really like have a strong perspective of it one way or another, but it did definitely feel very churchy to me.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, trying. I guess that's the view. That's the point. They're actually trying to make a difference. And I'm very impressed, actually, that this is all taking place in North Carolina, because usually anything south of the Mason-Dixon is pretty close-minded to any other faith. That was my experience, and I lived down in that area. Okay, let's see. I've been here 6 years, so six. So I lived down there about 12 years, and so there weren't any places. If you practiced paganism, you were quiet about it. You know, there was one store in Richmond where you could get your pagan supplies, and it was in a section of town, and, you know, it was very, very hush-hush. So it's nice to see that all of a sudden things have changed. There's actually a really great, let me see if I can find it, Judica Illis, who's a very good friend of mine. She's the author of Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells, and the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft, but she just had a wonderful class at a witch store down in North Carolina, and so I would love to see if I can, pull that up, because I had spoken to them, a little bit, And I was saying to them, wow, I didn't realize. They've only been there about 3 years, I think it is. But it's a beautiful, beautiful store, and they seem very eclectic, and they offer a wonderful wide range of offerings there. Let's see what we've got, which, I mean, I thought it was very unusual that there would be a witch store in North Carolina. I was very surprised about that. Let's see.
Yeah, you usually hear about these things up here.
Yes. So let me see. Nope, is that it? Okay, that's, hold on 1 second. It's really important because this is a really great store and they have a lot of wonderful items. Let's see, is that it? I might not be able to find it, but we can always, oh, here it is. Okay, the Holy Rose in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's a beautiful store, and they have all kinds of books. Judica was there August 4th, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. Priestess Rose is the owner there, and they have herbs, and they have a beautiful section of books, and they have a wonderful, wonderful plethora of offerings for those down south of the Mason-Dixon, and so I would definitely recommend it to people down in that area or those that may be traveling to swing by the Holy Rose. It's in Raleigh. And I think they might have a Facebook. I'll just check it out really quick because I always like to share different stores and especially since we are talking about, you know, diversity in North Carolina, it's good to let people know that, yep, here it is. It's 311 Blake Street in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it seems like their hours are 11 to 6 tomorrow. And you find them on Facebook. They're the Holy Rose. So that's good to know. So it's wonderful to hear, like we were talking about diversity and trying to help our Southern pagan brothers and sisters find opportunities down there. But you know, it's also, as we read and as we discussed in your two previous segments, that, you know, in some parts of the world, it just seems like things will not ever change. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Well, here it's more of a philosophical question, just sort of refining the freedom. We have the freedom, but we need to refine that and decide what that means. Do only established and popular faiths qualify for religious freedom? You know, and how do we handle that? As far as reading prayers and invocations before governmental meetings, in schools, I mean, is total acceptance and inclusion the best path or complete blocking of religious observance? Is that the smarter path? Because we can't just keep continuing to fight over which one, quote unquote, one is okay and which are not. I think it's just a matter of us figuring it out. At least we have the freedom.
Well, if there's a separation of church and state, why are prayers read at all?
Yeah. It's one of those things that's like, we have freedom and we're, you know, we have the freedom to be able to do it, but like what's better, to just sort of avoid the whole thing so that we don't clash and butt heads, or to just let everybody do it?
Well, it's like that comment, you know, I don't want to listen to a Muslim pray. And I mean, that's just so,
mm-hmm.
and you know what? And then they go to the meeting and then it was downplayed. It was downplayed,
yeah.
Like it was nothing, like it was no big deal. But like we talked about before, when we talked about the murders in Pensacola, that if he had phrased that for African Americans or gay Americans, you know, and actually for what he said about the Muslim religion, he should have been reprimanded or fired.
Absolutely.
You know, they always try to downplay it. They always try to keep it quiet. They always try to brush it under the rug. And I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting as, you know, we continue to move forward, especially as we have, you know, a new governmental structure will be coming in the next election. But yeah, I know.
I don't want to approach that. That's something,
no,
because
we're not gonna
feel like there's
politics.
A segue here.
No. I will not discuss. I don't discuss politics. Religion, I will, because that's part of the show. But no,
mm-hmm.
I generally veer off of politics. I can be pretty. My viewpoints are not met by a lot of people. Let's rephrase. My viewpoints are not accepted by the general white male population.
Yes.
Yes. I'm too.
Gotcha.
You know, I know misogynistic is the hate, is the degradation. What is it about men? What is the one? There's one that women have towards men. Misogyny is men that don't like women, but there's one about women that I can't think of what it is. I'll have to remember it for the next.
I honestly don't know, because sexism is a system of oppression that really affects women, and I don't really believe in reverse. So that's another segment, but I don't know what the other word is, because
it's not that I you know, I love men. I'm married, you know, and it's just, I just feel that, you know, I shouldn't be judged because I have breasts and a vagina. I'm thrilled to be born a woman. I'm a 53-year-old woman, and I'm not going to eat lettuce to be a size 2. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to fit into their mold, you know, and that's why, you know, it's actually a relief to be 53. I don't have to, you know, fit into the mold of that, of a woman who has to be always sexually appealing or sexually on demand into the eyes and the viewpoint of men,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just, you know, I can just be myself. I'm so glad that all that is over with. Because it's exhausting, you know, and I don't know, it's just, it's very interesting. It's very interesting to be witchy women in today's society. But, you know, because we live in Massachusetts, and because we, you know, Massachusetts is the state that it is, we have the opportunity to have a radio show like this and to express these viewpoints and opinions. You know, 10 years ago, we didn't have this, you know. I'm charmed. I've had charmed for my husband. I've had it. We're going on 6 years, but 10 to 12 years ago, there were two Wiccan stores that opened up in Marlboro that didn't survive, you know, because it just, you know, people who, I remember when I was on Main Street in Marlboro, and I remember people were just like, a woman came in to have a reading. She's like, oh, I don't want my friends to see me. I don't, quick, let's go in the back room. I don't want them to know that I'm here. So it's almost like, you know, we've come so far, and that was like 3 years ago. And it's so funny that people are just afraid of what someone else will think if they come in and into our store, or if they embrace a faith or an attitude from everyone else's. And that's where I think true change will come about, is when you just, as my friend Mama Jackie Newman says, you got to pick up your fuck it, not your bucket, your fuck it. And it's like, she says, a lot of women, they've dropped their fuck it. You know, they instead of picking it up and saying, fuck it, I'm going to live my life the way I want to, according to my standards and my principles, and so they can pick them all up, you know, that's when real change will come about, you know. But I like the way that you bring it about sexism, and it is sexism, and it is not just women. It is, you know, women, a lot of women have sexism towards the male race as well. But honestly, mm-hmm. you really can't blame us.
No,
you really
it's like
can't
they say,
us.
Like you can't really fault the oppressed for feeling the effects of the oppressor. And when women are constantly subjected to that over centuries, I mean, eventually it's going to wear on you, you know, and it's not to say that we're not responsible for our attitudes and understanding them, but I mean, it's got to be understood.
In the class that's coming up that you're going to come into on September 13th, our dedicant program, you know, we actually get into all of that in the Paganism 101, which is the second class, where we really get into the in-depth into the Inquisition, which is nowadays referred to as the Burning Times. For example, women were the herbalists and they were the healers, and then the church decided, well, oh no, they had to invent medical colleges that were just for men only. And so women who were midwives and who were herbalists and who were healers were executed and thrown in jail for practicing medicine without a license.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole reason medical colleges came about, was because, you know, and it was for men only. It was to suppress women into doing what they did best. A lot of, you know, midwives were not supposed to ease the pain of childbirth. The pain of childbirth is a woman's penance to pay because Eve gave Adam the apple. That was the philosophy. We're supposed to scream and feel the pain of childbirth as our penance for Eve's sin. That was the whole mentality.
I remember
that.
I remember learning that as a kid, Sunday school. Some frightening lessons that I look back on now. Like, wow, no wonder. No wonder I was so fearful for so long. You know, and I didn't even realize it.
Let me tell you, I told my daughter one thing, and I will tell you and every woman out there ready to have children, if you don't remember anything else I ever tell you in your lifetime, you remember epidural. Epidural. Did I give you an epidural? Yes, epidural. If you don't remember anything else I ever tell you, if you decide to have children, epidural, don't tell you that you don't need one, you get it. Because I'll tell you what, I wasn't numb from like this, the waist down. I was numb from the shoulders down. I was in labor for 2 days. My daughter was 10 days late in breech. And if she's listening to this, she's going to roll her eyes and kill me because I always tell this story. That epidural, it was the greatest thing ever. You know, I'm telling you, when they say you suffer. The pain is just unbearable. It's just like everything in your body moves. Your hips actually move and spread apart. Everything in your body just shifts and moves to make way for this baby to come down the birth canal. So it's almost like an earthquake within your body and a shifting just to give birth to a child. So when you think of it that way, you know, of course you're going to need, I mean, there are a lot of women, and I give them a lot of kudos that can do it. I'm not one. So epidural, I'm not going to pay for anybody's sin. You know, she might have given him the apple, but I'm all for Lilith. Lilith was Adam's first wife who liked the on-top woman in power position. Lilith was Adam's first wife who would not submit. And so she left the Garden of Eden, and she was ostracized as the child eater and the satanic mother and all of that. There are two aspects of Lilith, but Lilith is a fascinating topic, and maybe as we get closer through the month, that might be something that we can discuss. But, you know, that's my philosophy. But like I said, you know, I could go on and on and on about all of this. But
our
time has just about shortened up, so it's about 20 minutes of 10. So I wanted to know if you had any final words that you would like to add and you would like to say before we close out this segment and I wrap up the show.
Nothing except this was a wonderful experience, and I had a lot of fun, and I feel like I definitely want to delve into some of those topics we had to cut short. But, yeah, I look forward to doing it again, and thank you so much.
Okay, and we will be back on the air. We will be going back to our traditional Wednesdays p.m., and that will be next Wednesday, September 9th at 8 p.m., we will be back on the air, and TJ will have a whole bunch of other just interesting topics for us. We will have a special guest, and that will be announced sometime later during the week. So thank you, my dear. I appreciate all that you did. Great job. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate you going through, you know, all of this work and this research and being our producer, and I can't wait to see what we're going to come up with next.
Awesome. Me too. Thank you.
Okay, honey. Blessed be, and have a great night.
Blessed be. Good night.
Well, I'll tell you that she, the minute I met that young lady, I knew that she was going to go places in this pagan community, and I knew that she was the right one to co-produce this show. So I'm so very thrilled. Thank you so much, TJ, for your contributions tonight. I mean, wow. It was just very informative. It was awesome. So we are going to wrap up the show early tonight. We have about 20 minutes left. I just want to remind everyone that, yes, we will be back on the air next Wednesday, September 9th at 8 p.m. We will have the Witchy News Hour segment along with a special guest who will join us at 9 p.m. next week. I want to remind you about the Witches Cotillion Charity Ball for Karma Cat Rescue of Marlboro and Hudson. It's on October 30th, 2015 at Speaker's Nightclub in Marlboro, Massachusetts. We are sponsored this year by Samuel Adams and Wicked Wines. For more information, please visit our website, witchescotillion.com, witcotillion.com. Another reminder is that we have classes coming up on Magic School, and that website is magicschool.org, magicschool.org. And we do have Christopher Penzack, guest edgecrafter, that is coming to teach angelic witchcraft with us. And that is going to be on Friday, September 18th at 7 p.m. Seats are going fast. We do have a larger facility. We may be able to expand from 20 to 25 students, but my advice is to get your tickets as soon as possible. At the end of this broadcast, I will be posting a link on the website where you can buy the tickets online to save your seat. Seats are prepaid are $30 per person if you pay by September 14th. Afterwards, they are $35 per person and on the day of the class. My name is Lady Tara Morgan. I am the High Priestess of the Temple of the 13 Moons. I am the hostess of Witchy Women Radio. I am the owner of Charmed in Maynard, Massachusetts with my husband, Frank. Come visit our new location at 60 Main Street. We will be having our grand opening celebration on Saturday, September 12th. We will open our doors at 10 a.m. and we will party on till 9 o'clock or so. For more information about Charmed, please visit our website, charmed-witch.com. Make sure to like Witchy Women on Facebook, and I'm going to say good night. Thank you to all who came back and to listen out to our premiere episode as we enter the season of the witch, and blessed be.
Raven hair and ruby lips, sparks fly from her fingertips, echoed voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the moon in her eyes. She held me fell down in the night, dancing shadows and a firelight. Crazy laughter in another room, and she drove herself to madness with a silver spoon. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies.